through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Oh, we got a really exciting guest for you guys. It's one of your newest Seahawks. A lot of you guys have been really excited to hear from him. It is defensive lineman Kerry Hyder Jr. on the Issaquah Pest Control Hotline. Kerry, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Of course. So are you in Seattle right now?
No, I'm in Dallas.
How is it? So you're there with the family for a little while longer in Dallas?
Correct. I'm just training right now and just, you know, waiting to get to go, you know, to go back to work.
All right, Kerry, I'll have a football question for you after this, but you got a 6-year-old daughter. My daughter just turned 7, and I saw something that said you put her hair in a ponytail. Now, my daughter always asked me to do that, and that's all I got in the bag, man. I can't do any other designs, nothing like that. Does your daughter ever ask you to do something else to it, or is it just ponytail, and let's get it going?
Oh, she knows what I'm good at, man. She don't ask for nothing else or nothing more. You know, you got to add a little twist and put the bun on top. You know, that's how you add a little twist to it.
I'm imagining for both of you, you can also tell when it was Dad's day to get the kids dressed. The outfit right. Makes no sense. Yes, I'm sensing that dad energy from both of you right now. I can already tell. Well, I'm going to start with a football question. Kerry, in your press conference, you said that you just wanted to get into the best position, the best place for you in free agency. What made Seattle that place?
Well, coming to Seattle, I just wanted to they let me know they enjoyed the way I play. You know, they complimented the way I ran to the ball, the way I hustled, and, you know, pretty much my whole journey. So they were real complimentary of my play. And the main thing is they wanted me there. So this made it an easy decision for me.
Hey, Kerry, you've had an interesting career, a journey so far. And what people don't realize, man, when you're on that practice squad, it's a grind, right? You get injured, it's a grind. And you've been able to bounce back from anything thrown your way. Where do you get your mental toughness from?
Man, I think it was just instilled in me at a young age. You know, I just was taught just to, you know, just keep working and put your head down. You know, no excuses, and, you know, it's going to be rough sometimes, but, you know, you got to keep going, and it'll work out for you in the end.
Now, when Seattle kind of made their pitch to bring you here and to make you part of the Seahawks, what was the pitch? I mean, what did they tell you about what you could do here or to try to convince you to sign here?
I really think it was mutual. You know, it's kind of like all the cards kind of played themselves out and through free agency. And it's kind of like a match made in heaven. You know, it kind of worked out for both sides. And we just came together for an agreement, you know.
Okay, I love asking this question because athletes are athletes. What other sports did you play in high school?
I played basketball growing up. That kind of was my go-to. I played basketball. I wanted to my horn. My senior year, I was All-State. You know, I like to hang on to that. My sister would be mad at me for bringing that up, but I like to hang on to it.
Why would she be mad at you? Because you talk about it all the time.
Well, she's the basketball player in the family, I try to hold that over her head a little bit. But she's a pro in the family.
Hey, so you grew up in Austin. You went to Texas Tech. I'm not sure if Texas offered you or not, but when you did commit to Texas Tech, were there any bad opinions in the family that they want you to try to go to UT? What was it like once you decided to go to Texas Tech?
You know, I just go where I want it. You know, I grew up in Austin, so I kind of, you know, everyone was UT fans, but, you know, Texas Tech offered me a scholarship, and that was the best position for me, so I made my way to Lubbock.
Now, this is a question, Bump, I should be asking it to both of you, but I've always wondered, is knowing that a guy went to the same school as someone else a bigger deal just for the reporter? Because I had down a question, Kerry, a second-year guy here, Jordan Brooks, went to Texas Tech too. Is that something players actually, like, care about and get excited about?
Oh, man. Like, I didn't play with Jordan, obviously, and I don't know him personally, but, yeah. You know, when you see guys that, you know, you always try to, you know, keep an eye on them, and mm-hmm. I'm excited to play with him, excited to see him play. So it's definitely a plus for me.
Kara, you're coming off your best year as a pro, 8.5 sacks. Was there something that changed in your game, your preparation? What was it that allowed you to step forward and have the year that you had?
Well, I always feel like I was effective. I just feel like it was more of an opportunity. You know, I got more plays on the field, got more time out there. I was able to get more comfortable. So I always felt I was an effective player, but I just think I got more opportunities this past season.
Well, I know that a lot of people are kind of curious about you as the person. I mean, one of the things that fans personally love about their teams, and you know this, right? Like, you're an athlete, you love sports, you're a fan of teams, is when you feel like you get to know more about someone. So I'm genuinely curious. I know Bump is curious about who you are as a person. I mean, tell us a bit about yourself. What are you watching? What are you listening to? What do you like doing?
Man, I'm a chill guy, man. I watch the same. I'm the guy that watches the same shows over and over again, the same movies. You know, I like knowing the ending. You know, I don't like I don't like too many surprises. I'm a real chill guy, and I like investing my time in stuff that I know is going to work out for me.
What's one of your favorite shows? What's like a rewatch show where you're like, I put this on and I just let it go?
You don't laugh, but I mean, I've been watching Family Guy, it seemed like, for 20 years, it seemed like.
Solid choice.
Nice.
Solid choice.
Hey, so now, I'm sorry, go for it, Kerry.
No, go ahead.
So you've said you've modeled your game after Michael Bennett. You guys are around the same size, 6'2", 6'3", 270 pounds. I mean, I watch you play, man. I like what you bring to the table. What should the 12s expect to see out of your play when they see you on the field?
Just a hard-nosed player. I'm going to give everything I got. You know, I'm a hustle on every play. I'm going to go all gas on every play. I'm going to run to the ball. That's just who I am. So I'm just going to show that in practice. I'm going to show that in games. And that's just, you know, that's been my staple since I've been in the NFL.
Now, Kerry, I don't know if it's obvious from my voice, but I've never been a football player or a defensive lineman. So I have, like, my favorite plays from players that I've covered where I think, oh, that might be my favorite sack this guy had. But then I think, okay. Like, do defensive linemen have that? Like, do you have a sack that you had where you, like, a moment that comes to your mind when I say, what's your best moment, and you think of it? Or one of them.
I don't know if say best moment, but I know last year we played the Rams. I think that was probably my most complete game of the season and last year. And I just, you know, I kind of felt good about that game. I kind of felt like I put it all together that week.
Hey, Kerry, last year, in most stadiums, they didn't have fans. And I feel like that was an advantage for the D-line. You can hear the quarterback's cadence or whatnot. Is it going to be an adjustment going back to fans if they do have them in the stadiums this year?
I don't think so. You know, especially how loud the 12 is. I'm never going to say that's a disadvantage for me. I can't wait to get on the field and hear that crowd screaming and hollering on third down. Mm-hmm. So I'm excited for that.
Yeah, I bet. I mean, I've obviously the football season hasn't started. I don't know if you're a baseball fan, but we've been able to check out a few games so far. Even 9,000 fans felt like a world of difference.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. When we traveled last year, you know, we came to some stadiums that have fans, and you definitely could feel the difference.
Yeah. Yeah, I would imagine. So you can play both inside and outside. Obviously, you're great at both. Do you have a preference?
I would say outside. You know, that's where I put up the big sack numbers. But, you know, I'm willing to play anywhere. You know, I've been able to, like you said, get down there and play. I just, being able to be a pass rusher, you got to be able to rush from anywhere. So I just, you know, I take pride in being able to do that.
All right, Kerry, you're from Texas. I'm from Cali. When I moved up here,
okay,
I had to get used to this rain, bro. Like, I had to. I didn't have no rain gear. I'm out there in cotton sweaters.
It's not raining today. Don't listen to him.
Are you ready for this, Kerry? It's going to be wet out here.
Oh.
Hello?
Oh, we still got you. You go ahead and ask your question again, Bob.
I'm here.
The rain, Kerry. You ready for this rain?
I am ready. You know, I'm going to give me a raincoat and give me an umbrella. I'm going to buy all the stuff when I get there. You know, I'm not going to need it here in Texas.
Hey, I'm going to tell you one thing, Kerry. Don't get an umbrella. They will clown you. Okay?
No, Kerry, get
don't
an umbrella.
Don't do it.
Don't,
really?
Kerry,
got me.
Oh, don't listen
no-no?
To him.
Is that a Seattle no-no?
That's a no-no.
No, only haters say that. Kerry, I use an umbrella. I endorse your umbrella use. I will not clown on you at all. I am accepting of umbrella use. In fact, I would like you to know, Carrie, this is going to surprise you, but many athletes that I've talked to that are from the South or Southeast have also said that nothing beats a Seattle summer. So you got to make sure you and the family get up here in time. You're going to be here in training camp to enjoy it, but even, you know, you got to take a visit in kind of like June-ish. And I'm telling you, it is beautiful. You've never seen anything like it.
Okay, that was the plan. Me and the family going to get up there a little early and try to get settled. So we definitely get a chance to feel that nice summer.
So one of the cool things about this summer is going to be that there's going to be a little bit more of a normal off season. I think that most people would assume that that is what took so long for some defenses around the league to click, right? You didn't get a chance to really spend a lot of time together. You're going to get a chance with your new team. What's one of the most important things that takes it to click for defenses? Because I also noticed that sometimes it takes a couple weeks to get going.
Well, it's the chemistry, you know, and that's going to take us being around each other. And I'm sure we're going to be able to do that through practices and through training camp. And, you know, just building that chemistry, building that bond, especially the defensive line, you know, I feel like we're going to need it in the past and those things. And that's just through practice. That's through training together. That's through games. So that's just going to build over time and get better each week once we get together.
Now, Kara, I know you've spoken to, I believe you've spoken to Russell Wilson. Have you spoken to anyone else on the team? And just what's the overall vibe of this team right now?
I spoke to a few guys, you know, guys just welcomed me to the team and stuff. But, you know, the coach has already said here, you know, these guys expect to work hard, expect to be in contention, and expect to play great football. So, you know, it's already kind of built. You know, I just got to get in and just follow the leaders on the team.
Is there going to be any feelings going against the 49ers this year?
Hey, man, there's no love lost there. You know, I'm excited to be a Seahawk, and I'm definitely looking forward to all division games.
All right. Well, Carrie, we've really enjoyed speaking to you. Best of luck this year. We can't wait to see you on the field. And I'm telling you, bring that umbrella. Bump is going to judge you. I will not judge you. Bring as many umbrellas as you need. We can't wait to see you in Seattle.
Thanks. Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me.
See ya.
See you, Carrie.
Man, I'm excited to see him. I didn't have the guts to ask him, but I was going to ask him, are you going to lead the team in sacks this year?
I feel like he would have gave the PC. He would have been like, you know what? It's going to take a village. Every guy's going to contribute. I'm just going to do my thing. But as an athlete, in his head, he's like, oh, yeah, you already know.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's what I would be thinking. But then I'm like, oh, it's a new team. I don't want to make anyone mad. But am I gunning for that? 1,000%.
Most definitely.
Do you think he can?
I think he can.
I do, too.
I mean, we still haven't seen what Dunlap has done in a full season. But he's coming in. And from 8.5 sacks, I believe he's behind Jamal Adams. He should be, on paper, at least the second leading sacker on this team.
Can I also say, the busiest the text line has been today. We had people texting in being worried about pitching or being excited about the lineup. We had people texting in about the defensive line. No, 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 Bump. It's when you said, do not bring an umbrella in Seattle.
I'm trying to help them. I've been that guy. They clowned me.
Who actually made fun of you for bringing an umbrella?
I was coaching my first year. I was coaching at Redmond, and I showed up to practice. It was raining with an umbrella, and coach pulled me to the side and said, hey, son, this is football. All right, we don't have umbrellas out here. We don't use umbrellas. So ever since then, I'm like, all right, I'm going to get my rain jacket, rain pants, and keep it pushing.
Look, as someone with very curly, frizzy hair, if I spend 2 hours getting it ready, I don't care if anyone's making fun of me. That's too bad for you. I'm bringing that umbrella, and that's just how it's going to be. This hour of Jake and Stacey, by the way, is brought to you by the Pro Club. It's 12:15. That means it's time for Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass.
This is Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass.
With Jake and Stacey.
Live for moments like this. Time for us to step up and take it.
First down to you, Bump. You have been watching some Carry Hyder Jr. on tape. What is one thing about him that stands out to you?
Man, Curtis, I love his tempo. He can switch it up. Bull rush off the line. He can shake you up a little bit good with his hands. He just has a bunch of tools in his toolbox. And I think that's essential, especially at that DN spot. You're going up against the same tackle down after down after down. You got to be able to mix it up. I see a guy who can mix things up, get at you quickly, slow it down, put you to sleep, get after the quarterback.
Second down. Stacy.
Curtis, happy birthday.
Thank you.
I'm going to say it every hour.
All right. I'll hold you to it.
Oh, sorry. Happy 30th birthday. My bad, my friend.
At least I'm not 31 like you.
Once again, we're running out of time here. Second down.
We just spoke with Carrie Hyder.
Yes.
I want to know something that we may not know about him.
Okay, so I'm not just going to look back at his time in San Francisco when he had a career-high 8.5 sacks. I'm going to take us a little further back because Carrie Hyder's journey to the active roster in Detroit is actually a really fascinating one. Now, it kind of goes under the radar because he spent a year with Dallas and then kind of all his time in San Francisco took attention away from that with his really productive year. You guys, he started out in Detroit. First of all, he was undrafted out of Texas Tech, signed onto the reserve futures contract. No, those are guys that are brought in primarily as backups. I mean, you aren't being signed as priority free agents. You are just coming in and you may not even make the practice squad. He signs a reserve futures contract. He's cut at the end of camp, signed to the practice squad. Finally, at the very end of the year, gets to the active roster to play a game. Then the following preseason has a phenomenal preseason. Well, he makes the active roster after building that up. Then, early in the season, Ziggy Ansah, you guys remember him, suffers an ankle injury. All of a sudden, just like he did in San Francisco after this, Carrie Hyder is called on to be their starter, and he ends up leading the team with 8 sacks. It was a phenomenal kind of come up for him. And really, who knows what he could have been there after that season, because week one of the following season, he tears his Achilles. The Lions end up changing their defensive scheme a little bit, so it's not as good of a fit. But you wonder what would have happened the subsequent season had that not happened. I mean, he was really on the come up in Detroit.
Third down. Bump, the Seahawks only have 3 picks in this year's draft, starting at pick number 56 in the second round. What is the one position group you want to see them address first above all?
Retrievers. Got to go get a receiver, I feel like. Now, you drafted Freddie Swain last year. Sullivan was part of that mix. You got Ursua, who's still there. But there's no clear-cut number 3. If they don't go grab somebody, I think they got to look at receivers. There are about 25 receivers in this draft right now who could ball. Last season, the first 2 rounds, 13 receivers were picked. So you know they're going to go quickly. I think they got to look at that receiver spot. Unless they change what they're doing, if Snyder pulls a rabbit out of his hat and gets a bunch of picks and one earlier, I think you have to go with a receiver, bring him in, have him compete with Freddie Swain, and see what happens.
Fourth down. Bump, who are you most hoping can be a breakout star from the Seahawks 2020 draft class?
Am I thinking about this right? Marquise Blair, is he 2020?
19.
Goodness gracious.
But I'll allow Marquise Blair because he didn't really play last year.
Yeah.
I like that answer.
Because we kind of saw a little bit. Weeks 1 through 2, you're like, All right, this guy can play. I think, so I'm not answering your question. I'm going to go 2019. Sorry, Curtis. 2019. I think it has to be Marquise Blair. You got Dunbar who's gone. I think Marquise Blair can play nickel. He can play safety. And why not even try him out at corner a little bit like you did with the Trey Flowers experiment? I think this guy's going to be vital to this football team. Not 2020, 2019, Marquise Blair.
Yeah, I like Marquise Blair. Did you watch a lot of Seahawks training camp this past season?
Yeah.
He was one of the guys. I make it out to VMAC. He was one of the guys that everyone would talk about.
Yep.
Every single person. Obviously, people were like Jamal Adams. If you didn't know who he was and you didn't see his number, didn't see his name, you'd be like, who's 33? Who is that guy? But another guy everyone was talking about was Marquise Blair, and I was so excited for him because he was a guy that, kind of a quiet dude, not a lot of attention placed on him, but a relatively high pick for Seattle. I really wanted that for him. What's his role now with this team? I mean, you got Quandre, you got Jamal. He's presumably in there fighting at nickel, but I mean, where's he fit?
He's fighting at the nickel spot, and he's looking to be serviceable at the safety spot. And if I'm him, I really want to get on the field. Obviously, special teams, guys play defense, dominate special teams, but get some reps at corner too. His job is to be the fill-in guy. Whenever they need somebody, he's the first guy off the bench. He's like the sixth man in the NBA. I think if he can do that, he will find himself on the field. And what I've seen when he's on the field, like you said, you notice the kid. Mm-hmm. He's making noise. I love his swag. His demeanor, plays fast. Marquise Blair, get her done, son.
Is that a big transition to go to outside corner from where he would have been at safety?
Yeah, it is. Safety, you get to freelance a bit.
Right.
You see everything in front of your corner. There's pressure on you right now. So it is a change, but if anyone is able to do it, I think Marquise Blair can do it. Say what you want about Trey Flowers. He made the transition and still had 3 picks 1 year, was still pretty good in the screen game. He showed that you can make that transition and have some success.
Now, I am going to throw in 2 2020 names. Are we ready here?
Yep.
I need to talk about Alton Robinson,
yep.
And I've got to talk about Daryl Taylor. There's a ton of pressure on that kid this year.
Is there pressure, though?
There has to be, because here's the thing. It's not through any fault of his own. Not through any fault of his own. They knew when they drafted him that he might be a little slow to recovery. He had surgery in, I think, January or February to repair a stress fracture in his leg. So they knew that he would have to be coming back from it. I don't know that they expected him to miss so much of the season, but that's what ended up happening. Now, he was on track to play in the postseason, which means, to me, I'm expecting him to be part of training camp. The Seahawks, very unfortunately, have had some early round misses in the first or second round. It's not Daryl Taylor's fault, but I think now it's almost like he has to make up for misses in the eyes of fans.
Yeah.
It's not fair, but that's the truth.
Yeah, there's some expectation there. If Dunlap didn't re-sign, if Carey didn't sign, then there'd be even more. But I think because you have those guys, you're going to allow him to develop a bit. And then Alton Robinson, he came out and exceeded expectations. I think he puts pressure on himself for sure because he wants to play ball. He wants to get out there and show the 12s, look, this is why I'm here. Good luck, man. I think, but there's no pressure on him to perform at a high level right now. Just be productive. Whatever productivity means to the Hawks when it comes to Daryl Taylor, meet their expectations, don't worry about us. Because all we do is critique and nitpick and call you out on
Ignore
things.
Ignore us.
Ignore us.
We're annoying. But, I mean, it's how I think I'm trying to echo, like, and I know you do, how not only how we feel about it, but what some of the critiques are. I just think I see it too often on the text line. I don't agree with it. Yeah. But the name people always point to, Malik McDowell, it's not fair. And that was an unfortunate situation in itself, right?
Yeah.
But, man, there's just so much pressure on Taylor that reflects the organization almost more than him.
Yeah.
It's a bummer.
It's a bummer. I think he'll be fine. He was getting ready to play. If the Hawks would have won that game, we would have saw him in the next round of playoffs. So they believe in him.
Bump, you've got kids.
Yes, I do. Got 3 of them.
Before I get to the timeline, there's a story here about Rory McIlroy. Now, it's funny, except for the parent. Have your kids ever accidentally injured you?
Yes. When I was... My middle child, when he was about 3 or 4, he's sitting on my lap, and we're watching something.
I'm worried about where this is going.
He does something and flings his head back so hard, hits me in the nose, and it's your child. Like, you're mad, but like he doesn't know what he did. And I'm crying because, you know, not crying because it hurt, obviously. I'm a tough guy, right?
Right,
but because
totally.
You get hit in the nose, the tears come, and he looked at me so confused. But, yeah, that one hurt.
And he's stepping on Legos. That's got to be.
Stepping
that's
on Legos.
Killer.
Oh, my God.
I've heard there's nothing Legos. Worse. Nothing worse than stepping on kids' toys.
Especially at night when you're putting them to bed or something and your body's so relaxed. And you're just walking through their room and boom.
Now, Bump, I have awful news.
Okay.
I don't think that stops when they grow up. I think kids continue to sometimes accidentally hurt their parents, which is exactly what Rory McIlroy did in the first round of the Masters. I'll tell you about it next in the timeline.
This is the timeline
with Jake and Stacy,
brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
It is the timeline on Jake and Stacy, telling you guys some of the biggest stories you're going to see on your own timelines. And you might have seen this one in video form. First round of the Masters the other day, Rory McIlroy gets an errant shot off the way. And of all the people there, of all the people watching, the ball hits his dad. Yikes.
If my son is playing in the Masters, it would be an honor for me to get hit with one
like,
of his drives.
I'll take it. That's fine. It's
all
fine.
Day. It's my son. It's all good.
Of all the people, though, that's pretty wild to like manage to hit his dad with this tiny little golf ball.
It's like,
I watched Rory McIlroy in person at the U.S. Open in 2015 when it was here. The amount of torque that those guys get on their shots.
I'm shocked no one was hurt.
Like, I'm shocked that ball didn't go through his dad.
Kevin Durant and Draymond Green. Now, Curtis, you're going to have to go over the history of all of this. Downplayed the drama of Green's phone call to Durant, who was a pending free agent immediately following Golden State's loss in the 2016 finals. So first, cut 5. Here's KD
From my end, we sent some texts on some just, yo, I seen that. Like, you seen that? I bet. That's really what it was, bro.
That's exactly what it was.
And like, it wasn't like no urgent FaceTime call. Like, it was just like exactly what I just said. Like, yo, you seen what just happened? We bet. All right, I'm on the way.
That's not nearly as dramatic.
Like, say left. Like, it's done.
That's really what it was.
It was this whole narrative of like, you call Kevin crying from the parking lot. Y'all added a theatrical sense to make this a movie. Like, you know, you gotta make for TV. You gotta add on a little.
I know.
So like, people just start pouring on, bro. But I wasn't about to come out and fight it. Like, at the end of the day,
it was just
however y'all think Kevin got here. That's your mind, yeah, bro. With that, with that's it. What helps you out.
How weird to be part of that and to be like, I know what the conversation was, but then you hear about it and it's like, yeah, he was sobbing when he called him and crying in the middle of a parking lot. And you're like, how did the story get to this?
It's telephone, right? And the story gets more dramatic. It's like when you read a book and then you watch the movie. It's like, that didn't happen in the book, man. The movie made it so much more dramatic, but it makes the story even better. People love that stuff. It's entertainment, baby. Entertainment.
Oh, man. Curtis, was this a disappointment to find out it wasn't as dramatic, or did you just, like, I thought it was hilarious, the retelling of it?
I think it was expected that they took this route, just kind of downplaying it all, because Draymond doesn't want to be seen as somebody that's, like, begging for help.
No.
Especially because the Warriors had won a championship a couple of years prior without Kevin Durant. And so now, you know, we're years after the fact. We're 5 years after Kevin Durant signed with Golden State. That was two teams ago for Kevin Durant. So to hear them kind of downplay it, it is a little disappointing. I like to believe that Draymond did like FaceTime him with tears in his eyes. Like,
I do too.
We need you, Kevin. We need you.
Please, I need you. You know, related somewhat. What's the best feud in the NBA? You could pick all time, but even right now.
The best feud in the NBA. Everybody versus Paul George. I mean, Playoff P, where you at, Playoff P? You dropped, what, 35 last night, something like that, night before? Yeah, he just disappeared. So I like everybody versus Paul George.
Yeah, that is a good one. Everybody loves just lining up, taking their shots at him. Pandemic P, that's what he was in the bubble. Yeah, that's a good one, especially because he tends to discredit the greatness of a lot of guys that he plays against, especially like Damian Lillard. When he hit that shot over him, he's like, oh, it was a bad shot. It's like, went in, dude. Like,
yeah.
It didn't touch rim. It went in. It was a good
shot.
Quite
literally a good shot.
Yeah, you're just mad it went in over your outstretched hand. That's a good one. I mean, the greatest feud, I think, in NBA history is probably Shaq and Kobe.
Yeah.
That one
Well, and
altered
one of the higher
league.
Functioning feuds.
Yeah.
Like
they won
feud
three
that,
titles.
Yeah.
Not a bad feud.
I like Chris Paul and Steve Kerr. It's like passive-aggressive type stuff going on between them. Remember that clip where Kerr's talking to Paul? Paul smiles at him, turns away, like, come on, coach, what are you talking about?
And he's immediately frowning, just like, ha ha, don't talk to me.
Jumping to the MLB, the league is investigating multiple baseballs that are thought to have been doctored with an illegal substance by Curtis's favorite player, Dodgers ace Trevor Bauer. Some background for you guys. The MLB sent out a memo last month advising teams that, hey, we're going to be more closely watching these baseballs, and we're going to make sure that they aren't being doctored, that you guys aren't using pine tar, whatever else you're using. We're watching more closely this year. So first guy to get caught, it was on Wednesday when some balls used in the game by Bauer were found to have visible markings and a sticky substance on them. Now, the funny part from this is Curtis Bauer has been an outspoken.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of.
Well,
I'm not,
I mean, Trevor Bauer
against,
has
but,
been outspoken on
right.
everything. But this more so than like anything else he's been outspoken on, always blaming other pitchers for using substances on pitches. And, you know, it's no fun when what is it, the cat's got the gun or whatever?
Mm-hmm.
Dude, you are just as guilty, it would appear, as everybody else. The MLB would not be doing this investigation if they didn't have any reasonable doubt here. And that seems to be what's happened.
I'm going to say there's a pitcher or two on every team that does something to the baseball. It, it, for years, whenever I see a pitcher get the baseball, take his glove off, and he is just rubbing that
the inside
baseball
of his cap.
Yeah,
just
I'm
really
like,
adjusting.
Everyone's
the cap.
Doing it. Unless you treat them like TSA at the airport and you scan them before they get to the mound, like, okay, let's check, make sure you don't have anything in your neck, your brim. Guys are going to find ways to get around it unless you really use the cameras, kind of like the situation with Conforto. Like, you know, you have to use the technology and let people know you're using the technology to catch these guys.
Is using that worse than what the Astros did?
No.
No, I don't think so.
I don't think so either. No. I don't think there's much of anything that's worse unless the entire team is using steroids together.
Well, exactly. Like, you bring up the entire team. I think that's what makes the Astros so bad is that it was every single batter in that lineup. And this is just, you know, an isolated incident here or there. Now, there are plenty of accusations heaped towards the Astros pitching staff, too, with Justin Verlander and guys like Garrett Cole back in the day who pitched for the Astros. Like, oh, how'd these guys get so much spin on their pitches after kind of being on the downslope of their career? They get to Houston, all of a sudden, their numbers start to tick back up. They're playing at that level, that Cy Young level that, you know, they had been in years prior. Kind of suspicious going on there.
Just a little bit. It is time for the IRG Injury Report, brought to you by IRG Physical and Hand Therapy. MLB Network's John Heyman reported yesterday that James Paxton has been recommended for Tommy John surgery. That would obviously end his 2021 campaign and keep him sidelined until 2022. That is awful news for the Mariners. No official confirmation yet that that's the move. Again, that's just the early report on Paxton. I think we're all kind of assuming that that means he's out there seeking a second opinion. It's kind of a bummer, too, because when he initially talked about this injury, there was some optimism immediately following the game when he told reporters, look, the pain that I had when I had this forearm issue with the Yankees was way worse. It's mostly just discomfort. And I think people were like, okay, well, let's see if they're just playing it safe. And then it becomes even worse than that.
That's athletes for you, man. Oh, man. They downplay it as much as they can because they're hoping that is not true.
Yeah. The Seahawks, this from Warren Sharp, who is an NFL analytics guy. He says, the Seahawks have less draft capital than any team since at least 1999. That's not good. So where'd those picks go? And more importantly, was it worth it? We'll tell you what we think next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Rost.
This hour of Jake and Stacy is brought to you by the Pro Club. Michael Bumpus in here for Jake Heaps, who's on vacation. Hello, Bump.
What up, though?
Now, there is I don't know if it's a stat, so it's a bit of analysis. Warren Sharp, who is an NFL analyst, he evaluated the draft capital the Seahawks have, and he found that they have less draft capital than any team since 1999. 1999 is a long time ago. Like, that was before Titanic came out, I think, Curtis, or at least around then. I mean,
gotta be.
That was forever ago. So where did the picks go? What do they have now? And was it worth it? Before we get to that question, you got three picks right now, 56 in round two, 129, obviously not 129 picks, pick number 129 in round four, and then you got pick 250 overall in round seven. First of all, how are you feeling? Stressed?
You know what? I'm not stressed because I felt like they addressed the things that needed to be addressed. Offensive line, you got all linemen. Re-sign Dunlap, sign Carey. If those moves weren't made, then I would be hitting the panic button right now because I don't think this team is going to get better to win a Super Bowl in the draft. You got to bring guys in because this is a team that's ready to win right now. So I'm not stressed about it. I'm interested. Mm-hmm. I want to see is three all they're going to have. Is Schneider going to be the magician he is and pull out 6-7 picks? I don't know. I'm more interested than concern because I like what they did in free agency.
Yeah, I do too. And that's kind of my follow-up question. So first I'll tell you guys kind of where these picks went. So that first and third rounder that they had obviously goes to the Jets for Jamal Adams, a fifth round pick to the Raiders for Gabe Jackson. So you shore up your offensive line there. Now don't forget that in last year's draft, you traded one of your seventh rounders to be able to get back into the draft and take Stephon Sullivan. So you don't have him right now. So that's kind of a wash, but it would have been a late round pick this year. you didn't know at the time you would only have three picks. And then you had an extra seventh rounder that you acquired in that trade for Quandre Diggs, and you flipped that and used it for Carlos Dunlap. So you had an extra seventh. You don't have it anymore. That's how you get to three picks. So now, kind of the follow-up question, Bump, was it worth it? Those picks that you don't have anymore, one, two, three, four, five picks, netted you Jamal Adams, Gabe Jackson, Carlos Dunlap, and Stephon Sullivan.
I think the only one that didn't work out is Stephon Sullivan.
Which I'm okay with.
Yeah, and he was a late-round pick. Is he a tight end? Is he a receiver? No one really knows. They're going to roll the dice late in the draft. I'm okay with it. You named all starters except for Sullivan.
Right.
All those guys have made impacts on this team. We'll see what Gabe Jackson does. But you got Dunlap, Adams, and you say Diggs in that situation too?
Gabe Jackson.
Gabe Jackson, sorry. I'm good with that. They're all starters who can play right now. I do. You know, I love rookies. They're interesting. They're fun. They're fresh. But there's nothing like a veteran who can plug in and play right now. He's going to make mistakes. They're not going to be perfect. But you know that they've been around the block, so the development issues won't be as crazy as it would be with a rookie.
Text line letting me know that Titanic actually came out in 97. Thank you, text line. Very important to note there. So essentially, since kind of Titanic came out, the lowest draft capital. Now
you're still in the wake of Titanic.
You're in the wake of Titanic. you're still feeling the aftershock of that great film. Now, as far as kind of was it worth it, I also agree with you, Bump. If you're looking at what's the difference between a contender, which the Seahawks have been for a decade, mm-hmm. and a Super Bowl team, which they haven't been since their last trip there in the 2014 season. The difference might be Jamal Adams. The difference might be Carlos Dunlap. It's certainly getting your offense to compete with the top offenses in the league. And how do you do that? Bring in a guy like Gabe Jackson. To me, you solved it. The only thing you need to do, and they've done it so far with Gabe Jackson, the only thing you need to do is make sure that they're here a while. Because another thing with rookies and those rookie deals, you get them on the cheap and for 4 years. Yeah. Sometimes that fifth year option, but on the cheap for 4 years. You don't have Jamal Adams on the cheap for 4 years. In fact, you better make sure you extend him this offseason. Otherwise, you gave up all that, and he's not going to be on your roster.
Yeah, you got to pay the man Jamal and lock him down. But like I said, they are building for the next year or two. They're not looking 3, 4, 5 years down the line. Pete Carroll ain't going to be here that long.
Right.
Russell Wilson already tried to leave, supposedly tried to leave. I think it was all a bluff during the offseason. You just have to have a sense of urgency. And what they've done is shown a sense of urgency by bringing these veterans in. Nice to have rookies in, but you don't want to depend on a young guy until year one or two. Every now and then you get a Jordan Brooks, was great this year, but you couldn't throw him in right now and depend on him.
Yeah.
You throw him in to get those reps, get that experience. DK is an exception to the rule, kind of. He had, 900 yards his first year. He built on that. But DK wouldn't be DK if Tyler Lockett wasn't there, if Uncle Will wasn't there taking pressure off of him. So they realize there has to be a balance. You don't always want to depend on rookies.
Well, and they don't have, and this is one of the good things you can say about them. Right now, when I look at the Seahawks team, I don't see a major gaping, like, hole, just issue.
Yeah.
Cornerback's their weakest spot, for sure. They did bring in Akella Witherspoon. The hope is that he can find a kind of a second win with his career. Trey Flowers, he'll get a chance to, you know, have more time, more experience under his belt. Yeah, there's some issues there, but it's not to where you look at it and you don't know who's going to be there. When I look at the roster, I think it's going to be Akella Witherspoon and DJ Reed battling it out. Trey Flowers on the other side. Is it going to be a solid group? Who knows? It's certainly your weakest right now. You don't enter the draft literally without a starter there.
Yeah, exactly.
You have guys.
You got guys. And I think Witherspoon's going to be good. If he can stay healthy, I like what he brings to the table. He's super intense. He's not afraid to tackle. He doesn't have many turnovers, but, you know, Shaq didn't have many turnovers, and I still like Shaq. Say what you want about Shaq, but I thought he was always in good position. No one really beat him over the top. So you're right. They have starters in every single position. It's not like you're looking at the starting defense or offense being like, how is this guy on this roster starting? Everyone's pretty solid.
Well, it's like you said, if they hadn't brought in Carry Hyder, who we talked to earlier, or brought back Dunlap and Mayoa, that's when you're looking at the defensive line. And that's when you're saying, all right, you got LJ Collier, who unfortunately for him hasn't met the first round grade. You've got Daryl Taylor, who hasn't played a snap. You've got Alton Robinson, who was great his rookie season, but is in his second season. You know what I mean? You were looking at it thinking, I don't know who your guy is. I don't know who's going to be your guy. they've since solved that by bringing in three veterans.
Got two guys now on that defensive line.
Yeah.
Let's go, Carey. Let's go, Dunlap. I'm so excited to see what Dunlap does with a full season. And I think
am too.
He's like the glue. He already feels like the glue to that defense as far as personality and just how hard he plays. A full off season, a full season with this team. If he stays healthy, he's going to have a good one.
Now, I do want to see how that pass defense is, though, because if there was one weakness to Dunlap and Jamal, who were both kind of the catalysts for you getting those sack totals, it was in coverage. There's less responsibility on a DN to have a, you know, provide a really low quarterback rating for an opposing passer. Like, it's not his primary responsibility. Yeah. His primary responsibility is get to the passer.
Yep.
Get to him, wreak havoc on the line. So if your coverage grade isn't the best, you didn't have nearly as many opportunities as did your peers. But Jamal Adams is going to get more opportunities. Like, I do want to see, at least from Adams, a bit more there. And part of it was being part of blitz packages, mm-hmm. where he wasn't called on it. But you'd still like to see it. Like, I'm nervous if the cornerback group is going to be not solid, you got to see it from somewhere.
Yeah, if the cornerback group isn't solid and you've invested in that D-line and obviously Jamal Adams, it's up to them to help the secondary, because mm-hmm. they're going to get after the quarterback and make him step up in the pocket or move. So that's how you help a secondary that you're just not sure about. But I'm telling you, man, DJ Reed, I mean, this guy plays with a fire. He's humble and cocky at the same time. He's good in the return game.
Yep.
That was a great find by the Seahawks last year. And it was a pick that people just didn't really pay attention to. Oh, we'll see what this kid does. Has a couple of picks, forced fumble. So if you're hurt in one spot, the box has to pick up the slack. And I think they're capable of doing that.
All right, coming up next, we've been doing our Seahawks draft prospect profiles. Jake is on vacation, but he did leave us some insight to someone who could be wide receiver 3 for the Seahawks. That's coming up next.